Veronika Menendez, ja. Zanazana Salaka, ja. Saksu Sivanatan Zainatas Mai, Svigra Venma. Sri Chaitanya Manavistam, Stapitam Zainabutale, Sayam Rupa Kadamayam, Vadati Sapandantika. Vansa Kapatubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Vayivacha, Patitanam Pavinebhyo, Vaisadevyo Namo Namah. Today is Monday. Monday?
Not
night
for reading?
Yeah, okay. Well, do I get light or not? I mean,
we will do it.
Okay. We want to keep the mood. Yeah, okay.
I like the Bible.
So today is, it's confirmed that it's Monday. And the last time we spoke from the 10th canto in this chapter, who knows what chapter it is? 40 In 39, Krishna leaves Vrindavan. In 40, it's the prayers of Akura. And Krishna enters Mathura in the 41st chapter. So this is the 41st chapter. Now Akura, he carried Krishna from Vrindavan to Mathura, and then Krishna sent him to his home, and Akura had invited him to his house. But why did Krishna, what did Krishna respond? Does anyone remember? Yes. But what would happen? He was going to kill Kamsa. So it was already clear why he had come. And Kamsa was so, oh yes. Kamsa was so rascally, so nonsensical, that he had placed Vasudev and Devaki in prison again. Yes. Does this work?
Yes.
Hare Krishna. Yes, indeed it does. Except it's covering my right arm. Okay. Okay, it still works. Okay. Now, Kamsa was very clear on what he did. By the way, he was an expert diplomatic politician. And previous to what is described in the 36th chapter, who knows what happens in the 36th chapter? Kalindi, do you know? She's just being shy. That wasn't that funny. So in the 36th chapter, in the beginning, Krishna kills Aristasura. And then right after that, Krishna, or Narada Muni, tells Kamsa that Vasudev has tricked you. Because he had said that, and assumed that the eighth child was a girl and had been born somewhere else, or this child, Kamsa's worshipable deity of Durga Devi, had said that had been born somewhere else, that the eighth child, and then Kamsa began to send all his friends to kill all the children born in that during that time period. Maybe if you just... Okay. But the first thing that Kamsa did was put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison again. And there was a specific reason for that. And the reason was, he knew that if Vasudeva and Devaki were in prison, then Krishna would have to come to rescue them. And then, when Krishna was in Mathura, having come from Vrindavan, he would have him killed. So he set up quite an elaborate plan to have Krishna killed. And this we'll hear parts of it later perhaps. But he wanted to bring Krishna to Mathura. And everyone in Mathura know that Krishna had come, that he was the one who had been the eighth child, that the Akashvani, the voice in the sky, had predicted that the eighth child of Vasudeva and Devaki would be the one who kills Kamsa. So prior to this point, with Krishna being in Vrindavan, no one knew that he was the eighth child. Well, people suspected it, but no one knew for sure. But after the visit of Narada Muni, and then when Krishna came, everyone knew that the death of Kamsa had arrived. Now, when Krishna's going to Mathura, now Kamsa was very, very cruel, and he was extremely powerful. There's a story in the Garga Samhita that describes how he became powerful. He was Kalanemi in a previous life, who was either the son or grandson of Haranyakashipu, and he was always inimical to Vishnu, to the Lord. And then he attacked Krishna at some point in the form of Vishnu, while he was on the riding on Garuda, and Krishna killed him with his trident, and then he was brought back to life by the mystic opulences of Sukracharya. And then he performed austerities very similar to the austerities that Haranyakashipu performed to please Lord Brahma, and he was granted benedictions of incredible power. And then in his birth as Kamsa, he had incredible power. And all the demons that Kamsa had sent to kill Krishna were his dear friends and his dear servants, because he had defeated them. The wrestlers that are described in the 43rd and 44th chapter, Sala, Tosala, Chanora, Mastika, they were all extremely powerful wrestlers. Extremely powerful. And Kamsa walked into the wrestling arena and said, "Let us wrestle. And if you defeat me, I will become your servant. And if I defeat you, then you will become my servant." So in this way, by fighting and by intimidating, he made so many allies. And then he installed himself, and the bow that we shall hear about in this chapter. Does everyone ever know that there's a bow? That's why Kamsa had called Krishna to come. The excuse was there's going to be a great sacrifice, a bow sacrifice, which is performed on the dark moon day of the month, Chaturthiya, the dark moon day on the final day before the Amavasya, before the new moon, and this bow he had gotten from Parsaram. It was such a heavy, powerful bow. He got it from Parsaram, who had gotten it from Lord Shiva. This is described by our acharyas. And during I think in the seventh canto, there's a description of how Lord Shiva became known as Triparadi. So anyway, there was a bow involved, and this bow that Kamsa had received from Parsaram, who had received from Lord Shiva, was being worshipped in the Dhanujagya, or the bow sacrifice. And that was the excuse that Kamsa used to lure Krishna to Vrindavan, from Vrindavan to Mathura. Come for the sacrifice. Come to the city for the sacrifice. So, Kamsa was so powerful, everyone in the city was terrified of him. So therefore, they were more or less obedient. But when Krishna came, we saw what happened with the ladies of Mathura. We heard what happened, how they were so attracted to him, who was going to be the killer of Kamsa, who was Kamsa's enemy. They were throwing flower petals upon him in public. They were so attracted to Krishna, they didn't care for Kamsa's rule or their fear of him. This is the power of attraction for Krishna. So now we're going to hear of the next personages that Krishna meets as he's walking fearlessly. He's come to kill Kamsa. Kamsa is the king. And he's so powerful, and yet Krishna is fearlessly strolling through the city, walking. What was the comparison of the way he walked?
Elephant.
An elephant, just sort of very coolly going from side to side, just looking at the sights and beautiful Mathura. Everyone's staring at him because of his beauty. It's like the eyes became independent and they acted the way they wanted, and they wanted to just focus on Krishna. So it's very interesting. In the last verse we read, that will happen in the next verse. This one is about the next person that Krishna sees, the next persons. The ladies were on the roof, some of them on the roofs, they were throwing flower petals on Krishna. And then brahmanas standing along the way honored the two lords with presentations of yogurt, unbroken barley corns, pots full of water, garlands, fragrant substances such as sandalwood paste, and other items of worship. They worshiped Krishna with these auspicious items, and these auspicious items, they make the atmosphere auspicious. Because as we had previously mentioned, there's quite a difference between an auspicious atmosphere, and which is at least in goodness, and then when it's offered to Krishna, worship, or the Lord is worshipped by it, they become transcendental. And the atmosphere created by things in the mode of goodness and activities in the mode of goodness, that's why it's so important, cleanliness. The English saying there must be a Hebrew equivalent since everything comes from Hebrew. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Maybe not in Hebrew. No, I'm sorry. Well, the idea is what is that, a mosquito? No. The idea is that in the mode of goodness, the consciousness becomes elevated and very, very sanctified. And when the consciousness is sanctified, then to use one's consciousness to perceive the Supreme Lord, to worship the Supreme Lord, it becomes obvious, it's quite natural. But if one's consciousness is in the mode of passion, it's just one of 500,000 other things that one desires. And then when one's consciousness is in the mode of ignorance, then all one desires. It's quite comfortable, by the way. So the Brahmins, when they saw Krishna, it wasn't just the ladies. One might say all the ladies, they were just attracted to a beautiful young boy, and therefore they wanted to see him and were throwing flowers on him. But the topmost members of society, the most learned, the intellectuals and the pure intellectuals, knowing Shastra, knowing the scriptures, they also were worshipping Krishna with these items. Pots full of water, very auspicious. Garlands, fragrant substances such as sandalwood paste and other items of worship. They were honoring the Lord because they understood that not only was he going to kill Kamsa, and they were boldly worshipping him. Just imagine what that means. They're worshipping the enemy of the king in public. They were so attracted to him. And then, this is all while Krishna's just walking through the streets for the first time. Then the women of Mathura, they said, "Oh, what severe austerities the gopis must have performed to be able to regularly see Krishna and Balaram, who are the greatest source of pleasure for all mankind." Nara Loka Mahotsava. He is like a festival for mankind. Just seeing him was a festival. So they were seeing him for the first time. And they were thinking, not how fortunate we are, but how fortunate were the gopis, because they were seeing Krishna day after day after day after day. And we are so unfortunate. Our eyes have no value, practically speaking, because this is only the first time we were able to see Krishna. There is one verse that the gopis say, "Akshanvantam phalamidam naparam vidama sakya pashum anavasesya torvyasyai vaktram vajesha sutayor anavenu justam yavarnapitam anuratagataksamuksam." That the perfection of the eyes, because we have our senses, between our sense of touch. Sometimes we think, what is the biggest sense of our five senses? Which one is the biggest? Most of us will think that our mouth is the biggest, especially everyone else's mouth or something. But it's actually the skin is the biggest, that's because it's everywhere on the body, even though some people do have big mouths. But still their skin is even bigger. So all of our senses, they have a purpose. So for a materialistic person, a conditioned soul, he thinks that the purpose of the senses, the purpose of the body, is to give me sense pleasure, to give me pleasure. And life is meant for squeezing pleasure out of the senses, squeezing pleasure out of the body. But it's not a fact. That will cause frustration, because it's using something that is meant for one thing in an inappropriate way. Because the senses are actually meant for Krishna's pleasure. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti. That is what bhakti means. Is that when we use our senses for the pleasure of Krishna, Krishnendriya Priti, that is called prema. Dare premanam. That is what prema is. So the gopis were thinking, the ladies of Mathura were thinking, okay, by seeing Krishna this one time, we're so fortunate that we're thinking that we've wasted the rest of our eyes didn't have purpose, any value for so many years. So therefore, we're the most unfortunate. By tasting what fortune is, they felt themselves unfortunate. And on the other hand, some of the words spoken by the gopis as Krishna is leaving Vrindavan is say, oh, the fortune that we've been tasting or our eyes have been tasting is now going to be relished by the ladies of Mathura. We're giving up our fortune because we won't be able to see Krishna, but now the ladies of Mathura, they are going to gain the greatest fortune. Because it's completely natural that when one sees beauty, one becomes happy. What to speak if someone sees unlimited beauty? And once having tasted that beauty, tasted even with one's eyes, that's the wonder of a transcendental experience. Usually we taste with our tongues, but we can taste the beauty of Krishna. But it takes consciousness too. This comes out later in the 43rd chapter, when Krishna walks into the wrestling arena. There's a verse that begins, Malanam. The wrestlers saw Krishna, and the devotees saw Krishna. They were both looking at the same Krishna, but because they were looking with different consciousnesses, they saw something completely different. The wrestlers saw Krishna, perceived him as a thunderbolt, and the ladies saw him as the most beautiful of all. The Vrishnis saw him as our greatest kinsman, the greatest family member. Okay, everyone cough. No. Yeah, okay. Everyone laugh instead of coughing. One of the two. Okay, laugh or cough. Cough and laugh. Sneeze, as you like. But they saw Krishna in different ways. And when Kamsa saw Krishna, he saw him as death personified. What a difference. Because the consciousness was so different. So it's not that we see with our eyes, we actually see with our consciousness. And we all notice this happens to me so often that while I'm doing my puja or doing something else, and then I can't find something, and I look everywhere for it, and then, oh, it's right in front of me. Did that ever happen to you? Yeah? It's right in front, but the eyes didn't see it, because the consciousness was somewhere else. So therefore, what we're trying to do is develop Krishna consciousness, loving devotion for Krishna, so that we can actually see Krishna. Kamsa again saw Krishna. He was face to face with Krishna, and he was terrified, completely filled with fear. And he didn't see him as the Supreme Lord. Kaliya, the serpent, saw Krishna. And he saw Krishna's beauty and still immediately bit him because his heart was filled with envy. It's described by Srila Jiva Goswami that when Krishna killed the elephant, whose name was? He took one of the tusks and put it over one shoulder, and he gave Balaram the other tusk, and Balaram put it over the other shoulder. And they, for the first time, decorated with some perspiration and sprinkled with the blood of the elephant, and it looked like their bodies were painted. So beautiful. They walked into the wrestling arena, and everyone stared at them. The eyes of everyone in the arena, including Kamsa, who was on the dais, on the platform, everyone, their eyes were fixed on Krishna and Balaram. They were carrying the tusks of the elephant and decorated, and they were so beautiful and so charismatic. The actual meaning of charismatic means power. Powerful and effulgent. And everyone stared at them, and they saw Krishna in their different ways, but they stared at Krishna. They could not keep their eyes or consciousness from him. And everyone started talking about Krishna. And then Kamsa turned to one of his servants and said, "Who are they?" And the servant said, "These two are the ones." And Krishna was so effulgent. This was the first time Kamsa actually saw Krishna. He had been thinking about him, but he hadn't seen him. And then Krishna started talking. He and Balaram started. First they talked to the rest of the little. And then Krishna said, "Who is this Kamsa? Where is Kamsa? If he was so powerful, why did he have to place the elephant to guard the doorway?" And then he took the tusk and drove it into the ground right in front of the platform which Kamsa was standing, and Balaram did the same. And Kamsa felt the tusk going into the ground as if it was piercing his heart. That's drama, yeah? So wonderful. But we're not up to that part yet. Now Krishna gets entered. There's many more adventures before Krishna enters the wrestling arena. So the ladies were saying that how unfortunate that we haven't seen Krishna previous to this. Our life has been wasted. And the gopis, on the other hand, were saying the great value of our eyes, having seen Krishna, having been able to see Krishna, is now lost. And how fortunate are the women of Mathura. And then another adventure begins. Rajakam kanchid anyantam Ranga karam gadagraja drisva achata vam vasamsi dotani at utamani cha. Rajaka means a washerman. Because raja means color. So he was a washerman. Kanchit, a certain washerman, who was Ranga Karam. He did Ranga, or dyeing of cloth. So he saw Gada Agraja. The Agraja means the firstborn, who carried a club. The younger brother of him, Lord Krishna, it's the elder brother of Gada, who was another of Krishna's brothers. So he's already being called by his Mathura names. So Krishna walks. He's walking in the city and he sees a washerman who has many clothes, and he's Kamsa's personal servant, and he's washing all of Kamsa's clothes, and he's carrying all the clothes in baskets. And what type of animal was always used to carry? Donkeys, yes. So Krishna was so bold that he's seeing a washerman approaching who had been dyeing some clothes. Krishna asked him for the finest laundered garments that he had. They're actually all new clothes, finest, embroidered, Kamsa's, the king's own clothes. And Krishna asked him, "Please, please," and he asked very, very politely, actually. He asks him for the finest laundered garments that he had. Lord Krishna said, Dehi means please give, very polite. Please give suitable garments to the two of us. Now he was with all the coward boys, but he didn't ask for anything for all of them, just for the two of us, who certainly deserve them. If you grant this charity, you will undoubtedly receive the greatest benefit. Thus, requested by the Supreme Lord, who is perfectly complete in all respect, in other words, he actually doesn't need anything. And actually also, this washerman was demonic. He was a servant of Kamsa, and he had a demonic mentality. But the Supreme Lord, Krishna, who is perfect and complete in all respects, the arrogant servant being requested by Krishna, this arrogant servant of the king became angry. Krishna spoke very gently, politely, and sweetly. And the washerman, who was arrogant, immediately became angry. And he replied insultingly. Now, it's very, very interesting that look what Krishna did. He went over to the washerman. Imagine you doing this. You go over to someone who is some storekeeper or a washerman or something like that, who's washing for the president or something like that, and ask for some of the best clothes. And it's the washerman, it is said, Sukadeva says, who arrogantly replied. So one may think that Krishna is the one who's arrogant. I mean, who does he think he is? God or something? Like to ask for the king's clothes? But what Krishna does is always very, very intelligent, and it's always perfect. He knew the nature of the washerman. And he wanted to also send a message to Kamsa that the person who you feared and the person whose parents, Vasudev and Devaki, you have put into prison, he has arrived. So Krishna poked him. He poked him. And when you poke someone, even though everyone's walking around smiling and being nice on their best behavior, when they're poked, then what's really inside comes out. There's a little story that Prabhupada told about that. He was walking with one man on the beach who was very Hindu-y, the man he was walking with, and whenever Prabhupada would say, "But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead," he would say, "Yes, yes, yes, God is a person." But then when he would talk, he would speak that God is impersonal, and then he'd say, "Yes, yes, yes," and then he was personal. Whatever Prabhupada, yes, yes, so. So once, while Prabhupada was talking to him, Prabhupada chastised him very strongly or something like that. And then the man started talking about everything is God and everything like that. And then there was an argument, and then he walked away. And it was quite a drama, actually. And then the devotees, they decided, we don't want to, because he was walking with Prabhupada every day on the beach, we won't have this person anymore, we don't want to hear what he has to say. So then it was decided that they would only read from the Krishna book as they walked along on the beach, and it was the whole dramas were happening. It was quite interesting. So Prabhupada told the story, because when Prabhupada yelled at him, immediately he started saying, everything is God. So Prabhupada told the story. Once there was a man who spoke so many languages. And he spoke them so perfectly, with no accent, that no one could tell what his mother tongue was and what language was actually his mother tongue. Because he spoke every language, it seemed, without any accent. So the villagers they wanted to find out where he actually came from. So they decided on how to do it. So one day while he was walking along, one of them went over to him from behind and punched him as hard as he could in the back. And then he turned around immediately and started cursing at him in one language, his mother tongue. And they said, oh, now we know where you're from. So Prabhupada gave that an example. When you poke someone, then you find out what's really there. So similarly, Krishna poked the washerman. And this is how the washerman responded. You impudent boys. Impudent means? Chutzpah, we all know. Is that Hebrew or is that Yiddish?
Yeah,
yeah. You got a lot of nerve.
No, the origin of the word is Hebrew.
Of course, every word. Even Sanskrit. Yes. When you poke them, there's real thoughts come out. That's good proof. Impudent means what? Chutzpah means like nerve. You have a lot of, yeah. What's an exact?
Yeah.
No boundaries. Yeah, you're passing the boundaries of what's proper. You're just a boy, and you want the king's clothes. You impudent boys, Krishna, after all, spoke very nicely to him. You're accustomed to roaming the mountains and forests, so he knew who Krishna was. Giri Vane Chara. The mountains, the forest, chara. You're used to roaming the mountains and the forest. A village boy. And yet, you would dare put on such clothes as these? These are the king's possessions you're asking for. Now, how has come to the king? He had put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison. He had put his own father, Ugrasena, in prison. These are the king's clothes you're asking for. You're just village boys, and you want to wear the king's clothes? And then he said, now we're going to need some Sanskrit grammatical analysis here, so listen carefully. He says, Yatasu balisha maivam. Yata, go, asu, go quickly, balisha. Here is Krishna with Balaram. It's, well, okay, but the case, singular, plural? Oops. Balisha. Balishaha. It's plural. How sorry to say. Okay. So it's plural. He says, get out of here, fools. Quickly. Don't beg like this if you want to stay alive. When someone is too bold, the king's men arrest him and kill him and take all of his property. Excuse me? What? At a time like this... Ha, 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 ha. here. Now, Krishna was with Balaram. And he said, Balisha, fools, plural, or dual, perhaps. And Krishna, when he heard this washerman, which isn't a very high class position, servant of Kamsa, call him and Balaram fools, he would not tolerate him calling Balaram a fool. So everything Krishna does is so sweet and a product of his love and devotion for his devotees and his associates. So Krishna decided at this point, hearing the washerman say, Balisha, fools, not fool, but fools, he decided to kill him. For years, I was always thinking, this is quite an extreme reaction. Secretly, of course. Okay. Someone insults you, okay, you insult them back or something like that, or walk away in anger. But and then when I asked, sometimes I would ask why, and then you read that he was a demon, the washerman was a demon. But then when I read one of the acharyas' comments on this and saw this this point on Balisha, that he had called Balaram a fool and Krishna wouldn't tolerate it, then I thought, oh, this is perfect. I was satisfied, and this is a wonderful, wonderful pastime of Krishna's. So, as the washerman thus spoke brazenly, so it's interesting how the washerman was accusing Krishna of speaking brazenly. Brazenly means arrogantly, basically, out of one's position. Who do you think you are? But actually, it was the washerman who was speaking brazenly, impudently. And then Krishna, the son of Devaki, because he specifically called here Kupito Devaki Sutta. Krishna, the son of Devaki, who Kamsa had put into prison. And Krishna was coming, and Kamsa knew Krishna was coming to rescue them. And this washerman was the servant of this rascal Kamsa, who had stolen the kingdom, put his own father, Ugrasena, in prison, and was a rakshasa, actually. He was killing people. So then Krishna, the son of Devaki, became angry. Then merely with his fingertips, he separated the man's head from his body. I'm glad you all think that's funny. Okay. It is funny. I mean, he deserved it. But he chopped off his head just like that. Krishna became angry at him. Krishna, the son of Devaki, the servant of Kamsa, was speaking so impudently to him. Krishna killed him. He told him that if you will grant us this charity, you will undoubtedly receive the greatest benefit. And instead, despite Krishna's speaking sweetly and saying please and speaking very sweetly, For no reason, he became angry at him. And he called him fools. So anyway, he was killed. Now, the washerman, who was the head of King Kamsa's department, he had many servants and assistants with him. And what do you think they did? Yes, exactly. The washerman's assistants all dropped their bundles of clothes and fled down the road, scattering in all directions. Lord Krishna then took the clothes. So, Krishna ended up with the clothes. And why did Krishna need clothes, fancy clothes like this? The king's clothes. It's because Krishna, he's a fancy dresser. Actually, he likes to be a fancy dresser. And he had just come from the village. And he was going to go into the arena, the wrestling arena. And there he was, going to be the center of everyone's vision. Now, he couldn't wear village clothes. Krishna, he is the supreme personality. So many times it's mentioned in Shastra that he dresses like an actor on stage, Natavara. The best of dancers. The English word would be almost flamboyant. Okay, the Hebrew equivalent to flamboyant. Yes, is there a universal agreement on that? I mean, when he's in the forest, even the way he dresses, he's got a dhoti on that's so yellow and bright and flashy, and then a reddish kumaband belt, but red cloth to the side, and he's got a crown on, and he's wearing a peacock feather on his head, and his face is all decorated with the minerals like that, and his turban, he's wearing a turban of fine cloth and silk, and it's tilted to the side, and he's wearing, what kind of a necklace does he wear? Does anyone know? Yeah, gunja, but what kind of a necklace? A necklace of pearls. His hair is very curly, and it's just, sometimes he tucks it beneath the turban when he's about to fight with Kaliya or with the elephant. Sometimes he'll tie it back, take off his belt. And then he has his rope, the ropes that the cowherd boys use for tying up the calves and cows, and he has that, and it's got jewels and pearls on the ends of the rope, and he has that around his turban as a decoration, and jewels here and armlets here, ankle bells as he walks. So he's quite a dresser. This is actually one of the 64 qualities of Krishna, that he's a wonderful dresser. And he has it. And then some exalted persons, when Krishna goes out into the forest in the morning, their service is to dress him. More than one. They dress him, put fine cloth on him, scent sandalwood. But then when Krishna is in the forest, still, even though he has so many jewels around him, he prefers the garlands made of the Vrindavan forest flowers. Vanamala, that's the most preferred. And Gunjamala, the wonderful. Is there any Gunja here? Do you have any Gunja?
No.
Where?
Paris?
Yeah.
There's some very big trees, very similar.
Oh, yeah. But I meant any, like, Gunja garlands for, that you have for your deities or anything.
I have the fruits.
Huh?
I planted the seed and it came up.
Yeah?
I have many seeds.
You have seeds? And are they growing? Are they plants?
The Gunja berry itself, I have many. I have a big plant and it has small.
And it came out?
Yeah.
And the Gunja came out. And are you sharing them with the devotees?
I couldn't figure out a way to pick a hole in them. So I couldn't share them.
There must be a way. They have to dry first, though. Or maybe not dry, maybe before they're dry.
I think before they're dry.
Yeah. Okay. So Krishna, we were just speaking about Krishna, he likes to be the center of attention. It's completely natural for Krishna. So there's a description also of when Krishna enters in the 15th chapter, the 10th canto, when Krishna enters the Vrindavan forest for the first time. And the forest is so, the forest, when Krishna enters, the forest blossoms. And it's like he's called Madhava, because this forest is, Madhava also means spring. So it's like springtime, everything blossoms and flowers, and then the breezes come, and everything is so perfect, and Krishna is so, his senses are all pleased, and he wants to enjoy. So there's a tendency to think he's in Maya, he wants to enjoy. But the point is, that's his position. He is the supreme enjoyer. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. He is the center of existence. He's actually the center of existence. Mama angso tejo sambhava ishvara parama krishna sarva karana karanam sutre manigana iva. He's actually the center of existence, and he is meant to enjoy. And he is called in the words of the Brahma Samhita, he's the predominating enjoyer. He enjoys by predominating over everything and everyone else. He is dominant, he is the controller. And we enjoy, our pleasure is in serving the Supreme. That is our relationship with him. Mama angsa tejo sambhava. Mama eva angsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. This is who we are. This is reality, that we are meant to give Krishna pleasure. So that is very difficult for the mind of a conditioned soul to accept that we are not the enjoyers, but Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and we, our purpose of existence, is to give him pleasure. What do you think about that, Lior? You have to think about it for a while, huh? Yeah, it's actually quite heavy. So he's allowed to enjoy. He's supposed to enjoy. He's supposed to attract everyone's attention. And he loves being the center. And then, when he is pleased, then he becomes so captured by the love of the devotees. Vasudha Premi Anyonye Vasudha Premi Kore Rasa Puste Tansavara Premi Deke Krishna Hoya Tusha. When Krishna sees the love of the devotees, how selfless it is, he melts so much. He serves, he wants to serve too. And that's the amazing quality of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he loves to serve his devotees. It's loving reciprocation. He's the Supreme Lord, and the object of everyone's worship, and the one who everyone's supposed to give pleasure. And then what does he do? Does he just receive the pleasure? No, he wants to serve. This is the very mysterious land of Prema Bhakti, the very mysterious land of Vrindavan, where the Supreme Lord gets more pleasure out of serving his devotees than accepting the service of his devotees. Yet all the devotees want to serve him, and he wants to serve the devotees. And the devotees will do anything for his service. They'll give up their own meetings with Krishna to bring someone like Srimati Radharani, who has more ability to give Krishna pleasure. So anyway, this is the mysterious land of Vrindavan and the mysterious Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, and we'll just hear this part, we'll finish this, how the washerman's assistants all dropped their bundles of clothes and fled down the road, scattering in all directions. Lord Krishna then took the clothes. Krishna and Balaram put on pairs of garments that especially pleased them. They're allowed to do that. It's all meant for him. He is the center. The conditioned soul hates this idea. Like the washerman said, you're so impudent. What do you mean you're the center? So this is the false ego and the mind. They hate this idea. Inside every conditioned soul, there is enmity, envy with Krishna. Wow. You're the center? You're impudent, you're brazen, you're arrogant. So this disease, this is the disease of the conditioned soul. And the conditioned souls are so averse against service to Krishna, they'll even take up spiritual life, and rather than wanting to serve Krishna, they'll still want to be spiritualists, and they'll want to become Krishna. Anything but service. Anything but submission. Anything but surrender. So one has to deal with this internally on a very deep level. This is the essence of conditioned life. And inside, in the essence of conditioned life, is Krishna Bhule Se Jeevanadeva. There's a turning, a conscious turning of the back towards Krishna. There's a conscious enmity. And it can be shifted and changed by the opposite of we could say surrender, or we could say gradually falling in love with Krishna, hearing about him, understanding his nature as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also the fact that we can never be the center of existence. We can never do it. Because Krishna as the center can satisfy everyone. Everyone. The countless billions and billions of souls. This one person, this one Supreme Person can satisfy everyone. And this is like when Krishna goes and sits in the middle of the cowherd boys. He's looking at everyone. He has the capacity to have a relationship with everyone. How many people do we have a capacity to have a relationship with? Can we satisfy everyone? Can we satisfy anyone? But can we satisfy, what to speak of, everyone? But Krishna has that capacity to actually, in relationship, to satisfy everyone. It is wonderful. So Krishna Balaram put on a pair of garments that especially pleased them, and then Krishna distributed the remaining clothes among the cowherd boys, and all the rest they left scattered on the ground. Then there's the next part of this journey that we'll hear tomorrow. Krishna willing. Thank you. Anyone have any questions or comments? Yes.
This is so
heavy.
Captivating.
Oh, I thought you were going to say how heavy it was, then we're not the center of existence. So, but no. You're captured by the beauty of Krishna.
Thank you. You said that enmity is within every conditioned soul has enmity, and it made me think how to respond. Sometimes when we meet some enmity toward bhakti, I don't want to say in my heart, I guess it's also. But sometimes we meet enmity towards bhakti. What should be the proper mood?
You're talking about externally or internally?
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, decide.
Externally.
Which one? Which should we talk about? Just decide. Just pick one of them.
I guess externally, because
okay.
It's hard for me to think that people have actually internal, you know, who are not practitioners, that they have enmity towards bhakti without even knowing bhakti.
So we'll talk about externally. So. Externally, it describes how one thing is that this, in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, I believe it's in the second chapter, it describes three kinds of devotees. The Uttama Bhakta, Uttama Bhagavata, and the Madhyam Bhagavata, and the Kanishta or Prakriti Bhakta. The highest devotee sees everyone serving Krishna. This is his vision. But he sees himself as the lowest and not serving Krishna. The Madhyama, the middle devotee, who's not on that level, it describes four different ways to deal with the external world, the people in the external world. To those who are high, or the Supreme Lord, we serve. So that's the first thing, and the higher devotees. Those who are in the middle, who are on the same level as us, we make friendship with. And then those who are devotees less than us, or people that are less than us but have an innocent heart, we are compassionate to. And those who are averse, who are inimical, we avoid. So that's the Shastric description of how to deal with four different classes of persons, different stages of purity of the heart. Now, dealing with, so you, two other points. One, you said it's hard to believe that people who don't know anything about bhakti are inimical, but you have to poke them. I mean, not if you have to poke them, but if you don't know what people are like until they're in a circumstance. They've done a study at Harvard University that when there's a natural disaster, what happens is how people respond to a great disaster, like, you know, flooding or pestilence or something, is that all the people in the middle, there's the good people, there's the bad people, and there's the people in the middle. But what happens when there's a great difficulty is the middle clears out very quickly, and people either go this way or they go that way. They become very, very good, or they become very, very, very bad. So the world pokes us. And then internally, because it's like in the prison, it's hard to believe everyone in the prison is a criminal. But that's why they're there. It's because they are criminals. I mean, just as a general principle. And then how to deal with the little monster within. As we should become humble and very deep and prayerful and chant sincerely in the process of Krishna consciousness and serve. Prabhupada once said, even if we don't feel like bowing down, we bow down because the external will influence the internal, but also we need to cultivate something deeper internally. And when we see that we don't have I've been talking about being poked. So when we see that, like the washerman, when we get poked by circumstance, which is nothing but Krishna in a different form, we see 100 times a day that we fail the test, that we don't turn to Krishna, rather we turn away from Krishna, then we become humble and we get up and try again and pray to Krishna, become a little more humble, a little more deep, a little more prayerful, and know that the time, our time is running out in life, and we need some mercy to help us, things like that. Any other questions or comments?
I'm a little bit confused about the personality of Krishna.
Yes.
Because usually we hear that Krishna is very sweet, he's a coward boy, he's very kind, he loves his devotees. But in this pastime, it's like the washerman went against him, so he killed him. It's kind of like monotheistic religions, kind of like see God as very powerful, and who doesn't go with his laws must be punished, kind of thing. So I'm a little bit, I don't really understand.
Why Krishna killed him? Why isn't he kind to him? Why didn't he just change his mind?
Yeah, because usually we see Krishna as very sweet.
Okay. Excuse me. So keep on seeing Krishna as very sweet, and he'll treat you in a very sweet way. And if you see Krishna as impudent, what right do you have to say that you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the center of attention, and you're not allowed to get angry? Yeah, Krishna got angry. He's not allowed to get angry. Who does he think he is, again? But there's another side, too, that when Krishna becomes inimical to someone in this way, he benefits them. That's the nature of dealing with the absolute truth, that only good comes from it. But he is allowed to do whatever he wants. And he's teaching us that it's far better to be favorable to me. I will give you everything. I'll take care of you. Mame kam sharanam brajaham tvam sarva papabhyo moksha shami mahasutra, as opposed to what's the verse in the 16th chapter? Tapbishat samsureshu narandama. No. No, not that. Where he says that, he says it, what happened to those dvishakta tamahan kuronam samsureshanam. No. But he says that the demonic persons, I cast them down into lower species of life again and again and again. So, what do you think?
Personally, I'm a bit scared.
Well, just come over to this side. It's a bit easier. You think he acted a little extremely?
No, I'm a bit scared that's, you know, the person that I'm saying when I'm inimical to him, then it's usually I think, well, he's not, he doesn't see the bad.
He was a demon. He was a demon. A demon means that it's not like he has bad habits. You know, he's a good person, but he has a bad day, got up on the wrong side of the bed, or he had some problem. He was outright inimical to Krishna, as Kamsa was outright inimical to Krishna. He was a servant of Kamsa. He was actually of a demonic nature. That means opposed to the Supreme Lord. So, on the other side, there are those who are basically innocent, who may have some difficulties, but when they hear about the Supreme Lord, tepi tsitantira deva mrityam samsara mormini, just by hearing about the Supreme Lord, they move over towards serving him. But he wasn't like that. So Krishna knew his nature. He did many things with this. Wanted to show Kamsa something too, that I've arrived. He's going to do that again. Later on, he's going to kill a whole bunch of people. We'll keep asking if you're not satisfied.
And the washerman, the soul, so he got a better body that he could. What happened?
Those who are killed directly by Krishna become liberated. Kamsa gets Sarupya Mukti. He gets a form because he's always thinking about Krishna. He gets a form like Krishna's. Kambada alusanam vrajema putana. Krishna sees the essence of Baba Grahi Janam, and he sees the good amidst the so many lesser things. But he wanted to show something with this. And he would not tolerate an insult to Balaram. So what do you think?
Yeah. I'm calm now.
Any other questions or comments? Yes.
In the beginning of the class, you mentioned about Narada Muni, that after killing Aristasura, he came to Kamsa.
After Krishna killed Aristasura, Narada Muni came.
After Krishna killed Aristasura. So, in regard to Narada Muni, is he predicting what Krishna will do?
That's
or is
next chapter.
Yeah. But is he saying something and Krishna follow, because he's a pure devotee, is Krishna follow his wishes or dictates? How it worked?
If I remember, the acharyas say that he has seen these pastimes before. And Narada Muni is Krishna's bhakti shakti, is his energy of devotion. So he's inspired by Krishna's energy to move the pastimes forward. to move the past times forward. Because it's time for Krishna to move to Mathura, and Krishna, he won't go because he's so captivated by the Vrijbasis. So Narada has that service to do, and he's inspired by Krishna's energy to do it. And these pastimes go on cyclically, so he has knowledge of what's going to happen. So he says, when he speaks to Krishna, and the next day I will see you do this, I will see you do that, I will see you do that. So he's predicting what he already knows, what he's seen.
Look, there's the instance where Rama gave so many promises to Hiranyakashipu, and then Lord Nishimadev.
Brahma.
And then Lord Nishimadev kind of followed this, didn't want to violate.
Did you have a question?
I just had a realization. I used to think about this pastime of the washerwoman. Also, like why Krishna's reaction was like this. But when you spoke the last time, I had this realization that actually Krishna is a person, he's God, but he's also a person. And if your mother and father has been put in prison, if somebody kills your six brothers innocently or their children, and suddenly you come to see this person and you see his servant, how come you speak with him sweetly?
He did. Yeah, he's a person. Exactly. Supreme Personality of Godhead. All of us have your time for a few short minutes and welcome for the night. For me, what satisfied me was when I read it, when he said, Balisha.
You have a question?
Yes. Where? From the corner.
Yeah.
Did you have a question?
Yes.
Yes.
I wanted, if you may explain more about demonic consciousness as opposed to ignorance. Does this washerman know that Krishna is God?
But what he does know that Kamsa has stolen the kingdom. He does know that Krishna is the eighth child, and Kamsa was going to kill him as he had killed all his brothers and sisters, and he does know that Kamsa has put Devaki and Vasudeva in prison. He knows that. And he knows that he's not a coward boy. He knows that he's the at least the son of the king. He's royalty, and he's a washerman. He knows he's royalty, and he's a washerman. And the Brahmins, they knew that he was the Supreme Lord, and they were worshipping him. So, whether others knew that he was the Supreme Lord, but he wouldn't even recognize his position as royalty, he was so inimical. And he's just a washerman. In society, the washerman, it's one of the really lower levels. And he's royalty. He's so arrogant because I'm the king's washerman. And who's the king? So there's a certain consciousness that is demonic. And whether he knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was inimical to him, probably an argument can be made for that. But he was demonic. Is that?
Is just don't understand what it really means being demonic. Is it
being means?
Knowing that this is God, but I'm against it, or not knowing?
No, that's innocent when you don't know. But when you hear, you shift. When you learn, you shift. When you refuse to shift, that means demonic tendencies. And when you don't care and think that I'm supreme, that's moving into the demonic. Keep asking until you're satisfied, or... Yeah, this is described that there's there are those who are innocent, and they even though they may be appearing to be against the Lord, but by the process of hearing, their consciousness shifts. It's just natural.
So
and then there are those, yeah. Yes, but even if he didn't know he was the Supreme Lord, when someone is speaking politely to you, and he's only an 8-year-old boy or a 9-year-old boy, and he starts talking and responding like that, so that is one indication. Second, he's not an ordinary boy, he's Vasudev's son, and so he's royalty, and here I am a washerman. So he had so much arrogance, actually. So he could have spoken politely. He could have said, you know, my dear boys, I'll get in trouble if I give them, you know, I'm working for the king, and if I give away the king's, I'd like to help you, but I can't because I could get into trouble. You know, the king will be so angry with me, and you know what he's like. You know, he'll and who knows what will happen to you? I'm just afraid. So that would have been one way of answering too. There's many ways that we can deal with the situation. So he dealt with it according to his nature, and it wasn't very nice. Remember that here's this 8. How tall is an 8-year-old boy? So there's none in the house.
But,
my
height.
just young and delicate, and look how he spoke to him. If you were in the street and you saw some little 8-year-old boy doing something, maybe a little naughty, and you saw someone really threatening his life, what would you do? Would you say, "Oh, he's very innocent, isn't he? This nice person who's threatening the life of us." And Krishna's so beautiful and delicate. What do you think? Any other questions? Yes.
Did he kill him by his Vasudev expansion? Or
he was his he was his Vasudev expansion. Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan.
Krishna, Krishna.
Ananta Kotiyo Isavindi Ki Jai, this confounded Charvasa Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Premsi Ko Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vindi Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Ko Gopinath Swami Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Gaura Vadan Ki Jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Sri Navadipa Dham Ki Jai. Gangamayi Ki Jai, Jamunamayi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhakti Vindi ki jai. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Nitaya Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bho. Namo Vishnu Padaya Kisam Stavutale Sri Guru Bhakti Kata Sri Guru Bhakti Kata. Good night. Go to sleep. Have pleasant dreams. Be a good boy. Otherwise you'll lose your head. But Krishna's anger is transcendental. We always say things like that. It's not like if I got angry. It's not like that. It's only good. That's what it means. He's the Param Satyam. He's the supreme good. Only good comes from everything. If it's really simple. Because I don't want to take time now, I want to go.
Is that we are judge Krishna that he's not right or king means?
You can say from many sides. Set up. Yes, yeah, take it easy, sincere. Isn't that or just stubbornness or something?
Lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge more than anything. Not understanding who he is, who the Supreme Lord is, what does it mean that he becomes angry, what does he mean? Because we're comparing him to the material world, basically. You know, if someone speaks to you harshly, and then you get angry and kill him, that's not very good. So it's not like that. Good point.
And I have a few stories from you about too much opening about the money and the story about Tulsi, which is not a Vakshavani one's story, that it's not the move, you know, a line about the
yes.
Of service.
Yes.
So I try to understand what is the position of this work in
getting out. Don't worry about it.
So this story about Tulsi was very disturbing me.
Very?
Disturbing.
Don't get disturbed. Don't get disturbed.
It's not in our, is it true? It's not just in our line.
It's not the highest view of reality. That's another. That's the way we look at it. Not really. If it's really simple, yes. If it's not really okay.
The demoniac nature and the highest nature are on the binary move to turn the consciousness. It's very difficult to turn because the highest are very demoniac. So how do we turn to Krishna?
Our whole process is this. How to turn, that's what sadhana bhakti is meant for the turning to Krishna, specifically that. But your desire is to turn to Krishna. So you might not be very good at it, but your desire is to turn to Krishna and to serve Krishna. Yes? On good days. So don't worry. Krishna sees the good. Because you're not demonic. Is he demonic? Is he demonic? Is he demonic? See? Take a vote. It's a democracy. Weakness is different. Just become humble and turn to Krishna. Don't think about how bad you are. Turn to Krishna when you notice how that you're not good.